Welcome to Strength for the Journey. Thanks for joining us again. Strength for the Journey is a radio program designed to strengthen the believer for the days that lie ahead. We have a website. It's strength with the number 4, thejourney.com. And this is radio program number 134. Today I have my good friend David Williams back in the studio with me today to discuss current events and maybe current events in your life and in our life. What is God speaking? What has God said? Have we been obedient to do what he said? And we've done a lot of thinking lately about what has God spoken to us in recent years and have we acted upon it? Because I think that's what gets us in the position of where we are today. The Lord gave me a word a number of years ago, just before we came to Panama. And the word that the Lord gave me was, you have to be where I tell you to be, and you have to be there when I tell you to be there. And when I heard those words, I saw like two fingers pointing like in a direction, and those two fingers intersected. And one of those fingers was time, and one of those fingers was place. And in that place of intersection was an act of a place of obedience, that you had been obedient to go where God told you to go and when he told you to go and get there. And what the word was for me was the fact that he wanted us to leave the United States. And I was very apprehensive in some ways because I was going to a land that I didn't know anybody and I didn't know the language, but he was telling me to go. And part of the act of obedience was a submission of my will to do whatever he says to do. And in that place of submission became a place of captivity for me, that I became a captive of God's will now for my life. And with that as a backdrop for what we were going to talk about today, we're going to do a little history and what happened to the children of Israel. Before the destruction of Israel came a place of, in a time of captivity, where God chose his people, or certain people anyway, to be captives and become captivated by Babylon, by Nebuchadnezzar, and they were taken out of Jerusalem. And so we're going to discuss some of these things, and then a lot of it comes out of Psalms and out of Jeremiah. So David, why don't you kind of share a little bit about some of the scriptures that we're going to be discussing today?
Sure. And you know, you and I talk a lot about the concept of love and how a lot of the terms that we use and the concepts that we have in our minds have been wrongly formed. So, for example, to an American that has grown up in the United States, we think of the word love and we think of growing up in school in second and third grade and passing Valentines around to each other. And we think of pink and red hearts, and we think of candy, maybe roses or chocolate, and little precious moments, figurines, and you know, we have all of these things that are associated with the word love. And what's interesting about that is that the scriptures tell us that God is love. And so many times we have taken our human material physical connotations that we have with that word, and we've assigned those to God, and we think, well, that's who God is. He's my teddy bear. He's my Santa Claus in the sky, and he bows to my whims, and he does whatever I want. If I want chocolates, I get chocolates. If I want roses, I get roses. And he's there to pet my flesh because comforting my flesh. Well, that's what I consider love. But that stands in stark contrast to Hebrews 12, where it says that all that God receives as sons, all those that he loves, he chastens, and other translations other than the King James says he disciplines, but no matter how you slice it, it doesn't fit our American concept of love. So I say all of that as a backdrop to say that as we read all of these scriptures that relate to the way that God relates to his children, this is coming from a God of love, a God who so loved the world that he gave his only son. I mean, this is not some fluffy surface kind of love. This is giving that which is most dear in order to obtain us. This is a loving God. This is a good God. But with that backdrop, let's see how a loving and a good God responds to his children. So I think we were going to start out perhaps in Amos 5. And in Amos 5, starting in verse 21, he's speaking to his children and he says, I despise your feast days, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them. neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. Take thou away from me the noise of thy songs, for I will not hear the melody of thy viols. It's followed up with a verse that we're familiar in American history with Martin Luther King in his I Have a Dream speech. And he says, but let judgment run down as waters and righteousness as a mighty stream. So not to add to the word, but to paraphrase, he's saying, hey, I am a loving God. I'm your father, but I cannot stand what you're doing in church. I can't stand your offerings. Yeah, I'm not interested. And your music is just noise in my ears. I wish you'd shut up. And judgment needs to come because we need to make things right. You've turned your hearts from me. You're no longer concerned with the things that I'm concerned with. And we just need to bring it to an end. And so that's what he says in Amos. And it's interesting because we connect that with music, because music is a sign of man's pleasure, really, if you think about it. It's when our heart is glad that we sing and we make songs and we devise melodies, and yet when God decides to offer judgment, we can see in Psalm 137 what happens when it says, by the rivers of Babylon there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? So we see that this is a people who have been dealt with. They've been dealt with harshly. This good and loving father has said, sorry, I've let you go your own way long enough. It's time to face the music, as it were. Speaking of music, and so it's with that backdrop that we wanted to look at something that is oft quoted, especially in American churches, and that's Jeremiah 29:11. And so in Jeremiah 29:11, I'll read it first in the King James. It says, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you." This is God speaking to His children. "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you," saith the Lord, "thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end." And in other translations, I'll read from the NIV, what we're maybe a little more accustomed to hearing. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Now that sounds good. That sounds like the kind of love that we would like to receive. That sounds a little more like Valentine's Day.
Sound like something you'd want to put on a plaque on your wall, you
absolutely,
know, or maybe on your
maybe
desk,
a bumper sticker, sure. Yeah. And absolutely, that's part of a good and loving God. Praise God! We're thankful that He has plans to prosper us and not harm us. But you know, the context of that, we're going to read a few verses before now, the verses in chapter 29 of Jeremiah that precede that verse. And in verse 1 it says, "Now these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders which were carried away captives, and to the priests, and to the prophets, and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon." I'm going to skip down to verse 4, and it says, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I, the Lord, have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem unto Babylon, build ye houses, and dwell in them, and plant gardens, and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives, and beget sons and daughters, and take wives of your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that ye may be increased there, and not diminished." So I'm just going to pause there for a moment, because you, this week, are giving away a daughter to her husband, and I, within the next couple of months, my wife will bear a child here in a land that we hadn't really planned on living in many years ago. We didn't grow up aspiring to someday come to Panama. And it is a land, though it is full of blessing, and the Lord has dealt graciously with us here, it's also a land that doesn't necessarily pet your flesh, especially not if you're accustomed to the United States. And so as we read these words, remember that these are the words of to a people who are hanging their heads, who have hung their harps, who can't sing songs anymore. There is no joy in them. There is no mirth. And God is speaking to him and saying, okay, and it's in this place, I want you to go ahead and establish yourselves, because we've got 70 years of me dealing with you here, because I'm a good and a loving father. And so I'll read on. It says in verse 7, and seek the peace of the city whither I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets and your diviners that be in the midst of you deceive you, neither hearken to your dreams which ye cause you to be dreamed. For they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith the Lord. For thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you, and perform my good word toward you, in causing you to return to this place. Now, after all of that stated, now we get to verse 11, and he says, for I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end.
Now here's the whole context of Jeremiah 29:11.
Context is everything.
Context is everything. And what I felt like the Lord had spoken to me, getting me to this place where I would willingly go wherever he said to go and do whatever he said to do, he was telling me that I would either be a slave or a captive of him or of man. I had my choice. And I thought, and I've been thinking about this too, is King David, when he came to a place in his own life when he was given a choice, would you rather be turned over to men or turned over to me to be disciplined? He chose the Lord because he knew that God was gracious and merciful, and he'd rather fall into his hands than man's hands. And that's what I almost felt like for my own life and my family's life, is that it was not an easy place for God to take me and to discipline me or to mold me or disciple me. You know, if you understand the whole word or the context of discipleship, it comes from the word that we get discipline from. And we have been a very spoiled group of children in a land that's been plenteous and lots of blessing, and we've enjoyed the land of blessing. But it tends to make us maybe expect it instead of appreciate it. And when I left, and when you left too as well, you know, you learn to find a gratefulness in the simple things. You know, you a lot of things that you just would normally have taken for granted, you learn to appreciate. And this is one of the things that I have learned in my place of discipleship or my discipline, is learning to appreciate and be thankful for everything and anything. Because I've learned that in this place when we're being disciplined, is that if you don't find something to be thankful for, you'll end up murmuring and complaining. And you'll go back in your heart to the old days and the old ways, and you'll want to return. And it's like, for me, if God delivered me, which I look at as is the land of Egypt, as the children of Israel, they were all slaves. And they didn't know any different. This was something they grew up with, and they'd been there for 400 years plus, and here they were. This is all we know, is slavery. And God's going to say, I'm going to change ownerships, okay? I'm going to take you from your old master, an evil taskmaster, by the way, and I'm going to become your master. Will you submit to me and let a loving God take care of you now? And will you follow me and be thankful, even though it doesn't look like a new change of menu is dropping from the sky? May just be same old manna, and I may have you pack up one night, and we're going to move tents, and we're going to go forward. Will you be thankful and say, oh, Lord, where are you taking us today? Is this the day that we get to go to our promised land, or is this maybe, you know, I got a little more disciplining to do with some people, so actually, you know, you're still murmuring, complaining. Let's lap the mountain one more time. You know, you realize it was only, a week or 10 days that the journey could have been to the promised land. And when they sent the 12 spies in, there were 10 that didn't have a good report. And if you think about it, if you look back on your own life and you think about what God has done for you to get you to the point that you're even listening to this radio program right now. You think of the miracles that God has done in your life and how your life may have been spared from accidents to who knows. I mean, I'm just saying personally, I can think back many, many times that my life has been spared. And I think that God got me to this place. You know, he got me through the Red Sea. It parted them. The unbelievable miracles that took place that got me delivered from Egypt, let's say. Now, I can't trust him in the wilderness to finish the job. If he did all this for me in my past, surely he can finish the job. He just wants us to be thankful. Oh, Lord, thank you for manna. Look at this thing. It fell from the sky today. I get to eat another day. Wow. Is this the day where you get to go in? Or is this the day I'm still being... maybe there's some old Babylon in me that's still being removed. But you know what? What you just described in the first 10 verses of chapter 29 is to be content where he has you. If he said, you know, he's called you out and you're in a new land, hey, quit hanging your head and saying, oh, woe is me. I'm not where I used to be. Things ain't like they used to be. There's no Walmarts. You know, look, make the best of your situation. So here we are. We're in a foreign land. 6 of our 8 children came with us. And now one of them is getting married to a Panamanian this weekend. And you're going to have a baby in a foreign land.
A Panamanian.
A Panamanian baby. So things are wonderful, but it's all perspective. You know, you can look back and think of what you don't have right now, or you can think of the wonderful things that God has done. And all I can say is that if we aren't thankful, we'll end up going back in our heart. That we'll want what... This is where the leeks and garlic played into the children of Israel. They were starting to be more thankful for what they used to have and what God was going to give them. I mean, the guys that came back with a good report, they had these grapes that looked like, who knows, apples. You know, they're big. Everything was a land of milk and honey was where he wanted to take them. But yet... they weren't thankful. I mean, those should have been, hey, this is candy for my future. I mean, what in the world? You realize the leeks and garlic was after they saw the promises that were coming over from the promised land. They wanted to go back to what they used to have in a land of slavery. They were essentially, this is almost like a spit in God's face saying, I would rather be a slave to man than be obedient to you. Well, yeah, well... we'll just work this whole generation out. You know what? Not everybody that's living right now is going to see the promised land. Your children will, but that's about all that's going to see the promised land, not you guys.
And everything is perspective. If we really believe the words of Jesus, that it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle, then certainly we would want him to do anything that he could in our life to enable us to enter into the kingdom of heaven, wouldn't we? And if we believe that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, like Jesus said, and if we believe what Jesus said in that that which is highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight, then we would say, well, God, just strip me from anything that would hinder me from entering into your kingdom and being pleasing to you. So there, that requires faith. The word tells us that anyone who comes to God must believe that he exists, number one, and two, believe that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So here again, everything's perspective. What would we, are we able to receive the things in our lives that come that may not be pleasant, that may be a stripping process, and say, ah, my Father's rewarding me. I'm diligently seeking him, therefore he's rewarding me. I know that we would not be here in Panama had there not been a stripping process that occurred beforehand, had we not gone through some really difficult trials and tribulations, that was what prepared us to be able to come and to stand here to this point.
You know, it reminds me of, you know, a couple of things. The straight gate that one must enter is a gate that's narrowed by obstacles, okay? So if, you know, I've been to Israel a few times and one of the things they talked about, what the eye of the needle was literally a very small opening in a city wall that a camel or person had to go through, and they had to be crouched over. A camel had to go in on his knees, And literally all the luggage had to be unbagged, you know, taken off the back of that camel so they could get through this place. And I think about, if it's narrowed by obstacles, well, it's narrowed because the baggage that was on that camel, that was what narrowed it. And if you think about the narrowing, is what are we carrying in our heart? You know, all this stuff has to be stripped off. And it was, okay, I'm going to strip you, and then let's see what remains. I'm going to strip all the fluff off of you when I take you to Panama. And if you take your fluff with you, you're going to wish you hadn't have taken it. It's what we find a lot of people. They bring a container, they do all this stuff, and they go, what was I thinking? I wish I'd never brought this stuff. Now I got to stop, pay for storage, or I'm renting a house that's already furnished, and you know what did I brought my past with me. And it's really what God is trying to say with us is that we need to be stripped of our past. We need to be stripped of everything that we loved before, and let God reattach us. I mean, that's a part of, you know, when you go through a pruning process, you know, I've watched, you know, even videos on how to graft something. You know, if that grafted piece that you're being grafted, when you graft into a tree, the new piece that's grafted can't have a whole bunch of leaves all over it because they'll just end up wilting. You have to strip all the leaves off of it to be grafted so it's not trying to give life to all the old stuff that was on it before. Once it's grafted, then new life comes to it, and then new leaves come out and everything else. And it's the way the Lord is trying to do with us. It's like another analogy is that friend of mine that had a big magnolia in his tree, a tree in his front yard, and he moved it to his backyard. He's a landscaper. And I've shared this story before, but you know, I asked him, how did he do this big giant tree? How did he transplant a huge tree like that from two different locations, from another location? And he said, it wasn't that hard. I dug a big root ball around it. I laid it over on its side, and he made this motion of like you're stripping leaves. And he stripped all the leaves off the tree. And then he said he brought it back to his backyard. He had all the equipment to bring this big tree back there, and he dug a hole, uprighted it, and watered it, and said, there it is now. I said, well, what do you mean? I said, stop right there. I said, I was just like baffled by what he said. I stripped all the leaves off the tree. And I said, well, why'd you do that? He said, well, wouldn't that kill the tree? He said, no, that's what saved the tree. And I thought, wow, I just, when he said that, just like just bells and whistles went off in my mind that his stripping the leaves off the tree to transplant it was what saved the tree. And I thought, well, how does that apply to our own lives? If we're being transplanted from one kingdom to the other, we're being delivered from the only other God that God talked about. You have yourself two different masters. It's either me or it's mammon. You know, God's trying to get our hearts out of a kingdom of mammon to his kingdom, that we don't seek the things of this world, but we seek him. And this is the difference that many people are being translated and transferred from, is from the old kingdom to the new kingdom. It's not necessarily out of a physical location, although it may be a physical location that God is transplanting people. But the main thing he wants to transplant us from is from our love for the things of this world to a love for him. And he said that no man has left houses and lands and family, and he goes on to the whole list, and he said, shall not receive 100-fold in this life, in a life to come, eternal life. And what I've discovered is that he's trying to separate our heart from the stuff that we'll willingly give up. And that once we've willingly given it up, then he can return it to us because it'll be used for the right purpose, not for our purpose, which we always sought before, but now it's for his purpose. It's that we've been delivered to be a good steward now, because we were only a steward for our own life before, but now he's trying to transfer us to be a steward for somebody else's life.
You know, it reminds me of what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7. In verse 29, he says, but this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possessed not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. And, you know, and that's the thing. We need to have our eyes upon the Lord and not upon the things of this world. I often tell my children, you know, there's that common phrase that the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And I tell them that, you know, when the great stock market crash of 1929 happened, there were people leaping to their deaths out of, you know, 50, 60 story buildings because all of a sudden their net worth had been decreased. But some of those people who leapt were still millionaires. You know, maybe they had $100 million in the bank that morning and now had been reduced to $5 million. But they were still millionaires. It's all perspective. And so, you know, if we're told in the scriptures to humble ourselves before the Lord, to not think more highly of ourselves than we ought. And so in this world, in our life, to recognize that anything that we have has been given to us, and that only for a time, and that only, as you said, to be good stewards of it. And really, if we believe what Jesus said, to serve those around us. And so, you know, I guess I would say to those who are listening, we would want to encourage you to reassess your life, to look and say, what do I have, and why has it been given? Has it been given to comfort my flesh, or has it been given to serve and love the people around me?
And, you know, something else that I realized too is that there will be a change and maybe a transfer of wealth. There'll be some wealth that'll be taken away from people in the near future, and some people will be given. You mentioned that when the poor people that were left around Israel, in Israel, they were given the stewardship of those that had been taken away from. So someone had to take care of the property. So there was a transfer of wealth. Many poor people ended up wealthy, you know, after the transfer.
When the exile took place.
When the exile took place. And, you know, if we're going to have some changes in the economy, you know, the stock market can't continue to go up. You know, it's almost hit 20,000 now. There's going to be a time of correction. And in that time of correction, many times people will think that the boom is going to last forever. But the truth is that it doesn't always last forever. And the question is, are you going to be thankful for what is left, that you have left, or are you going to be bitter for what was taken away from you? Those people that jumped out of the buildings, they may still had $5 million left. Maybe they were bitter to their death over the 95 that they lost. So the question is, God's going to do some stripping in the near future. The question is, where is our heart? Is our heart in a grateful place? No matter what, God, we know He's a loving God and He's going to take care of us with what we have left. Or are we going to be bitter over what we've given up and what maybe has been stripped out of our hands because we wouldn't willingly give it up? So I just want to encourage you, those who are listening, just seek the Lord, put Him first in everything that you do. Know that He is a good daddy and He will take care of you if you will turn your whole heart to Him. There's nobody else that has your heart if you give Him all of your heart. So again, thank you for joining us on Strength for the Journey. Again, our website is strength4thejourney.com, and we'll see you next time.